So you said you might move back to Thailand?
I don't know. You know, Sun Tzu said, make your plans dark as night.
Sure.
And then when you strike, like a thunderbolt, you know?
Right.
I don't know what I will do, but I'm not very impressed with America anymore. I love America. Mm-hmm. I've traveled around so much, you know, I've kind of like jaded my thoughts.
And, yeah.
You know, my dad always said, happiness is not a place. So I'm real careful to think that if I go back and live in Thailand, it's going to be drinking coconuts and I'm going to work out and go to the beach every mm-hmm. day. It wasn't like that when I lived there for a year or so.
Yeah.
But it definitely is a change of scenery, even from Miami.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want to over romanticize places, but
yeah.
There's definitely options. We're finding out that through the globalization of the world that America is just the best place to make money.
Yeah.
The American dollar still, and the passport opens up doors that if you're not American, you can't appreciate.
Yeah.
Like, or maybe we don't appreciate like having a U.S. passport, being able to make money in U.S. dollars does.
Bro, it's huge. My wife is Russian and she, to have a American passport, especially with what's going on Moscow.
No
shit. I mean, they're being invaded.
Right.
Not that it's going to be effective.
Right.
It's all just a ploy.
The Ukrainian incursion into Russia, right?
That's right. It's not going to be effective. Russia will win. That's not even a question.
Just because they have the manpower, right?
They have the manpower. They have nuclear bombs.
And right.
They're willing to use. They're willing to use them. I think Putin said recently, like, you know, the American people don't believe that we're capable of using them. I don't think it's a ruse. I think Putin should be handled with kid gloves, and definitely. But the situation there is so bad. When you are from that area, I mean, my wife, man, she's like, you know, forget it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Oof. So you're not impressed with the political situation, or what do you find that America's not? Well, first of all, I think, do you agree with this? The military they can't even get recruits now. So flash forward from your era, 15 years later to now, we don't even have, you could argue, Colonel McGregor argues that we're not even prepared manpower-wise or munitions-wise to even go to war with anybody right now.
Brother, you have the sheep herder go down and kill his best sheepdogs.
Right.
Beat them. Prosecute them. Persecute the sheepdogs. Throw them in cages for defending the sheep from the wolves. Guess what? He's not going to ever defend the sheep mm-hmm. when the wolves come back to devour the sheep herd.
Right.
And that is exactly what's happened. Look at Eddie Gallagher, highly politicized event. Look at my situation, Nisar Square, highly politicized event. When they start attacking our men and women for doing their job, you spend millions of dollars into a special operations soldier, a warfighter. All he knows is kicking in doors and kicking in faces. And then you prosecute him and make his life hell for that.
Mm-hmm.
Him, his buddies, his friends' friends are never going to want to serve their country again.
Right.
They're going to be like, no, remember what happened to so-and-so? Dang, mm-hmm. you know, dang, I'm not, no, I don't want any part of that,
yeah.
you know? And so with me, in regards to staying in America, I'm like that beat dog now. You could bring me into your house as a rescue puppy, but every time you go to pet me, I flinch now.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I get a piece of mail, I flinch. I don't answer my mail, just like McAfee. Just don't answer your mail, you know, because I'm so conditioned into this 15-year battle with the DOJ, the FBI, you know, all these different things. And I'm not saying woe is me. I'm saying woe is America mm-hmm. for going after your fighting man.
Yeah.
There's always going to be a psychopath here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, there's not that many psychopaths in our military going around doing crazy stuff.
Mm-mm.
All right. It's just Monday morning quarterbacking. And that's where the real problem is. I'm telling you, we're going to look back on this 20, 30, 40 years ago, from now, and we're going to look back and say, man, the downfall was going after, you go after the protection, you're not going to have protection when the wolves come.
Right.
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 It's just, it's pretty simple. For me, it's common sense, but it's not for many.
I'm thinking that, man, we might be able to avoid all that just through the end of fiat currency, which we could shoehorn into talking about cryptocurrency and your story with McAfee. Mm. I think that the debt crisis is going to become so untenable around the world that once governments are forced to back their central banks with Bitcoin, we return to a true hard money standard. I don't think governments are going to be able to afford to make war anymore unless they really have to. Because remember back in the day before you could just print money, governments could just print money. If I want to invade you, your country, and I'm the leader of my country, I have to raise taxes because I don't have a printing machine. If I want to spend more money than what I bring in from taxes, I have to raise taxes. And that makes the people say, whoa, that makes the people scrutinize a lot more. Like, what, you want to go to Iraq for what? For what? It makes no sense. You want to go, why do you want to go to Iraq? Really? Now you can just lie and then just print more money, create more debt. So I think that we're leaving that system. Like, I think that this is the end, the last era of the powers that be holding on to the old system. I'm actually very bullish.
Yeah. I think we're optimistic. In the last days, actually. Oh. I think we're in the end times. Like, and I don't know, maybe not in 100 years, maybe in 20 years, maybe in 100 years, maybe, but I don't think it's past 100. I don't think that our society can sustain this when you have so much corruption involved. And I'm just talking about America as a nation. Mm. Okay. I don't think we're anywhere in the picture in the end times, unless we're still supporting Israel. You support Israel, you're still blessed. I honestly don't think we're doing that. And we've tolerated so much evil stuff in America. Mm-hmm. This is my point of view. Mm-hmm. And to go back to Bitcoin, the reason why Bitcoin is so valuable is because there's only, 21 million
right.
of them. All right.
And already 19 million have been mined.
19 million have been mined.
And counting.
That's why it's so valuable. So when you correlate that and parallel that to the amount of money being printed in the U.S., it's very easy to understand. The reason why something is valuable is because it's scarcity.
That's right.
And then people place value. Like McAfee always said, why is it so hard for you to believe in crypto? People have been trading sticks, cherries, bison meat.
Shells.
For shells.
Salt. Salt was a currency.
Pepper was as much as gold, they said at one time.
Wow.
For kings. Pepper. Like a little bit of pepper.
Yeah.
And so, man just places value. So forget about, you don't have to understand crypto. Mm-mm. You don't have to understand, but the crypto train is leaving. Yeah. The station in America is so far behind because the banks are so corrupt.
Do you think America's far behind the crypto? I think I think even Trump's talking about mine the Bitcoin in America.
If Trump does that.
And RFK Jr., by the way, talking about it.
I think we are behind in cryptocurrency. Other countries have accepted it at ATMs as a form of payment for anything and everything.
Yeah.
America is catching up. But if you noticed, America vehemently went after anybody and everybody that was making any money in crypto.
Especially back then.
Look at Jamie Dimon. The president of the whatever bank. John McAfee hated him.
Chase, yeah.
Chase Bank. Because John McAfee hated him, though. Because Jamie Dimon got on there and said, don't invest in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is shit. The banks are here to say. He was investing in so much Bitcoin during that time.
The whole time.
It's so corrupt, man.
Think about that.
Yeah. But he doesn't get hemmed up, of course. I hope he doesn't.
Okay, so why do you think John McAfee on the internet is such a popular figure? Because he killed himself, allegedly? Is it because he's a libertarian? He's just exposing the deep state? Like, why? You know how some people become, like, clickbait popular? Why was McAfee that way?
Well, I think people can see that he was an actual genius, even though he was talking about crazy stuff. I'll eat my dick if Bitcoin doesn't turn to $1 million by so-and-so day. You know, these crazy words, you know, like having sex with a wild, well, crazy stuff, right? On Twitter. Well, the thing is I asked my wife, I said, what is it that people, because her generation's younger than me, you know, and they were all about, they love John McAfee. We used to go to pull up to a Sonic and kids would just swarm
McAfee. And I barely knew McAfee when I was gardening. I was like, who's McAfee? Check your computer, idiot. You know?
Right. McAfee antivirus. Yeah.
And so, but the kids loved him. And I asked my wife the other day, I said, why is it that he's so popular? And she's like, because he's like a father figure. And but he spoke with authority. Mm. You know, many times when John McAfee would speak at an event, at a keynote speaker, people would come up to me and say, he was speaking directly into my eyes. He was telling me things about my life. And I'm like, dude, I hear people say this everywhere we go about McAfee.
Wow.
And I think he was just speaking the truth. Mm. He was basically saying, do not be deceived. We need a peer-to-peer transaction-based society.
Right.
Why are you paying all these taxes?
Yeah.
And people would say, a reporter would say, well, you don't believe we have to pay taxes? And he's like, well, I mean, you should pay taxes for what you use. Mm-hmm. You want to cross that bridge? You pay a tax on that bridge. Mm. You don't want to cross the bridge. And of course, you got to have people paying their taxes. But, you know, 50% of their taxes? No way, man.
No fucking way.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So he was he was this like really eccentric billionaire entrepreneur, kind of like this enigmatic figure, this figurehead of like freedom, what society could be.
Yeah.
He's like a radical. Like the powers that be would look at him as a radical.
Radical, but in truth, radical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like saying, what are you guys doing? Don't be deceived. Don't be another cog in the wheel, he used to say.
Right.
He says, but get outside the matrix. You know, he was saying what Andrew Tate and all these guys are saying now.
Right.
You know, years and years ago.
Right. That's right.
And he was backing it up with all of his inventions. You know, the McAfee antivirus basically shadowed everything else he had done. He's a big proponent in iMessaging. He was major guy with Steve Jobs and all the other guys out there.
How did you get hooked up with him?
Man, my buddy, T. Cav, he called me out of nowhere right when I retired out of the SEALs. And
this is what year?
This is 2017.
So you're saved at this point. You're cleaned up. You're off dope.
Yeah, yeah.
Alcohol.
I had just got out of the SEALs. So you know, I'm partying, I'm drinking, but I'm trying to get my life together. I'm not on any crazy drugs.
Okay, but you haven't been indicted yet.
Not indicted.
Okay, got it.
But I did have my big fight with the DOJ and the JAG in the Navy.
I see.
I won that case, got reinstated, retired out of the SEALs. Now I'm out and I get a call out of nowhere. And my buddy's like, yo, bro. He's like, you want to go work for John McAfee? He'll pay you whatever. And I'm like, who's John McAfee?
Right.
He's like, check your screen, bro. Check antivirus guy. And so lo and behold, John McAfee calls me out of nowhere. And he's like, you know who this is, son? And I was like, I think it's John McAfee, sir. And he's like, yeah. He's like, how much you charge? He got down to brass tacks on everything. He always got down to brass tacks. And I said, well, $500 to $1,000 a day, depending upon the threat. And he said, that's freaking ludicrous. I only pay my Green Berets $250 a day. And I don't know what I was thinking, man, but I said, well, it's your life, sir. And bro, I would have gone for anything. I had my VA payment up on my house.
Yeah.
I don't know why he said that. I just said, it's your life, sir.
That's awesome.
And I paused like, and he's just like, you got balls, son. And he liked me from the beginning because I kind of, you know, he didn't lose negotiations. He didn't lose anything, man. He didn't lose.
Mm.
You know, John McAfee never lost. And so he was like, all right, but you got to be here tonight. That was a stipulation. I'll pay you $500, but you got to be here tonight in Lexington, Tennessee. I thought we were going to go to the Caribbeans, you know, somewhere beautiful. He's in this podunk meth town. I'm not saying people from Lexington, Tennessee are meth heads. I'm just saying it was a very podunk town.
I can see it.
Maybe. And so I get there. There's crazy guard dogs everywhere. And he's making all this money with crypto.
Mm.
And
when you say crypto, what? Like he's just trading like altcoins?
Yeah, yeah. He would basically, okay, this is what he did. This is why I got in so much trouble. Is when I showed up, man, all the guards are trading, right? And the FBI later asked me, they said, so you turned $1,000 into $350,000 in like a month? And I said, yeah. I said, you wouldn't either? And they were like, well, they kind of laughed and said, yeah, maybe we would. And they actually admitted that on the phone. And so I get there and John McAfee's just like making all this money and he's just tweeting out coins and stuff. He's like, hey, guys, I'm going to mention a coin today. And so what he employed me as once I got there as his guard, I asked him one day, I said, sir, I have $250. Can you put this in a cryptocurrency for me? I was not, dude. And he was like, what are you talking about, son? Get that out of my face. He's like, no, you got to learn it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so he started teaching me everything about cryptocurrency. I started reading white papers all day, 40 white papers a day. And he gave me these parameters to pick out altcoins for him. Mm. And what he was going to do with that altcoin, once I picked it out for him, is he was going to tell his million people on Twitter, this new altcoin he had picked out. But he told people, he says, do not invest in this cryptocurrency that I'm about to tell you. That's number one. He said, this is very stupid if you invest in it. He says, I'm not telling you to invest in this coin. I'm just going to be saying a coin of the day.
Mm.
Pretty brilliant guy.
Right.
Well, of course, if you were in the game back in 2017 in crypto and you followed John McAfee, you're going to try to figure out which coin he's going to mention that day.
Because you know the value is just going to skyrocket.
Yeah, I had mafia guys corner me and tell me they'd give me $400,000 cash if I would tell them the coin that I was going to pick out, because they knew I was picking out the coins for John.
Right.
I mean, I was running the show. And so John McAfee gave me these parameters, and I would run through all these altcoins, and I would look for a certain volume, a certain circulating supply, a certain price. It had to be around 1 cent. Because if it goes to 2 cents and you put $100 on,
double your money.
Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't like the 4 cents because then you got to go to 8 cents, right? To double. So I looked for these 1 centers, 2 centers. And one reason why he liked me is because he thought I was his lucky charm. Mm. I was just lucky in that I got there at that time. And he's Irish. I'm Irish. He's like, dude, he's like, you're my lucky charm, son. And he's like, what's the next coin? He's like looking at me like the casino. Mm. But I was thinking it's his influence.
Right.
It's his power. 75% right. of his Twitter base would do exactly what he said.
Right.
So no matter what he mentioned, the coin was literally, I would pick out a coin for him. His mathematician guys, his accountants would say, his crypto guys would say, this is never going to work, sir. The numbers, this guy, Jimmy, is way out of his game. And John McAfee would go to me and say, this is what my guys are saying. I got $1 million on this, Jimmy. $1 million freaking. Is this the coin or not? You know, red coin or Doge.
Yeah.
And I'd say, sir, you don't understand. He goes, you don't tell me I don't understand. I'm a freaking mathematician. What do you mean I don't understand? I said, you don't understand. You're thinking of numbers. Your crypto guys are messed up because they think that it's a numbers thing. Like it doesn't have the right numbers because it's not going to come up to 2 cents. I said, but you're not understanding, sir, that you have so much influence and power that when you say this coin, it don't matter what the numbers are.
Right.
You're going to get your 100% off.
People go buy it.
You're going to get your 200% profit.
So his idea was call a coin out or use you to call a coin out, have that shoot the price up and then sell.
He had coin of the day scheme going on.
Right.
And he told everybody, don't invest in this. But I'm going to mention a coin of the day,
mm-hmm.
but don't invest in this. It's very stupid. You're going to lose money. Of course, people are going to do that. Reverse psychology, right? People are going to, you know, that if you were in that game at the time. And of course, I'd even put money on the coins that I was giving McAfee at first because I didn't understand the crypto game. You had to be kind of pretty smart at the time.
Yeah.
You had to know, really early on. Yeah, you had to be on the exchange. You had to exchange,
you
know, all this stuff and do this. And so the first couple coins I gave him just skyrocketed. And I go, man, I'm an idiot if I don't put money in this.
Missing your,
And so I told my wife at the time, I said, we're going to put $1,000 on this. And she goes, are you crazy? And I said, well, I think it's going to do something. And so, you know, I gave him the coin. And of course, we made 100%, you know, 2,000.
Yeah.
And you ain't got to make 100%, but a few times before you way on up there in money. You know what I mean? And so I just kept doubling down. I would pick out a coin, give it to McAfee. He would mention it. If you weren't ready, though, if you didn't have the exchange up and ready to press sale,
you'd miss it.
He said, I'm about to mention the coin. And I'd be like, wait, sir. He'd be like, no, 3 seconds. And I'd be like, dang, you know, open my computer. And when he mentioned that coin on Twitter, dude, that the candlesticks in green would just skyrocket just for a split second.
Right.
And then it would just go down.
So that was
people just dump
and then.
Yeah.
So people buy in for like literally seconds before they sell.
Yeah. Like literally by the time when he mentioned it, if I didn't push sell maybe a couple seconds after that, if I waited too long and got greedy, he always said, Jimmy, you're greedy.
Right.
Everyone's greedy. He goes, if you would just pull out at 30%,
yeah,
you're going to be a billionaire. If you do this 100% thing, you're going to, I said, but you pull out 100%. He goes, that's not your business. He goes, but you have to pull out. He tried to make me pull out at 30. So he would tell me when to sell. And I would always wait. I would always like delay.
Yeah.
I'd be like, 30, you said, sir? You said sell. He'd be like, sell, damn it. And I'd be like, what? You know, because it was screaming up.
Wow.
And so it would go to 100, 200, 300%. And that was working for a while until, of course, people adapt very fast. The enemy adapts, people adapt, everybody adapts. So they got bots involved, and the bots somehow were able to just lightning fast.
Right.
I mean, you had to be on your game. In fact, they were almost quicker.
So then what? Okay.
But I had the mafia even come. These guys that kind of cornered me one time and said, hey, you know, we're in Vegas here. We'll give you $400,000 if you just give us the name of the coin before. Just that's all you got to do is just. And I said, no. Yeah. And I told McAfee, I said, McAfee, man, these guys are offering me cold hard cash. So that made him, we had a bond. Me and McAfee had a loyalty bond. Because he loved that, you know.
How long were you with him?
I was just with him almost 2 years. Real hardcore for a year and a half.
And then why did you end up leaving?
We had a big, departing, a kind of a meltdown. Like I, in all truth, I was doing all kinds of stuff, man. I don't know if he drugged me. I don't know if he drugged me, bro. I put something in my drink or I was up too much or what, but I just had a manic like episode. I just melted down. I was working every day.
Yeah.
I was up all night. And you know, when you don't sleep, you can go into like a psychotic thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I literally ran out into the woods in North Carolina, lost my mind, and stayed out there. It was the coldest night I think I've ever had in it, but I was willing to die out in that cold water. I was like this. I was so scared. I heard machine guns. So it was like I had a big flashback.
Wow.
In war. I had a big flashback, bro. I could literally hear big firefights going on and people looking for me. And I just put myself down in the cold water in this marsh all night long. I don't know how I survived.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Dead serious, bro. I just stripped off all my clothes and ran outside.
Were you doing drugs at this point still?
I was doing stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
I was doing like this nasal spray that was like speed. And we were all doing it. The crypto traders were doing it.
Right.
And I was like, what is that, bro? And they were like, it'll help you stay up. And I was like, let's go, you know? And so I went down that's when things started happening for me. That's when the chain reaction of events started happening with all the drugs and money started pouring in.
Yeah.
I started getting out of control. I was like making, dude, I was making like 25 grand a day.
Like, so you were almost like a Wall Street trader. You're almost like a New York City, like day trader, but time. You're in the woods of Kentucky or Tennessee or North Carolina.
Ocracoke, looking over the Blackbeard where he invaded the British man of warships right there in the Sound. It was beautiful office.
Right.
I had a massive office. Guards were guarding me and John because I was with John all the time. So they're like, I was in the limo with him all the time. I was no longer a guard.
Yeah.
I went from his bodyguard to the CEO of his whole company running the show.
Wow.
And he forced guys to call me boss. At first, I was like, don't call me boss, man. It's weird. But eventually, I was running the show, man.
Wow. So you're making his company, his whole company was basically crypto at this time.
Yeah.
Like he was out of like the spyware business. He had already sold McAfee, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he had sold McAfee to Intel for, I think, $700 million. But man, I brought the treasury up a lot of money and I made them a lot of cash and I was doing deals. I was doing all kinds of deals with,
what kind of deals?
With crowdfunding, you know, ICOs, blockchain technology companies were coming in. And basically I just looked at McAfee as the ultimate marketer. And so I was like, McAfee, man, you could probably get $100,000 cash for one tweet. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
For one tweet. $100,000 cash. Wow. So I started doing deals, negotiating deals for him and with Russian oligarchs, with everybody, for blockchain stuff. I mean, in Ibiza, I traveled all around the world and with Russian oligarchs, man, partying, dude.
No shit. So basically like people would pay him to like tweet out their new blockchain.
Yeah.
Yeah, people would pay. People would.
So he's almost like he's an influencer.
Yeah, it's like Michael Jordan wearing the yep. the Nikes.
Yep.
And getting paid big money for it. Now, where you get in trouble with that is when you don't disclose that you're
being paid to do it.
Being paid to do it. But McAfee, he would always use the Michael Jordan analogy. He goes, "Does Michael get on the commercial? You know he's getting paid by Nike." Uh-huh. He doesn't uh-huh. say, "I'm getting paid $1 million to wear these shoes right now."
Right.
He wears the shoes. You go, "Wow, he's getting paid a lot of money."
Okay, but so clearly somebody had a problem with it because this eventually becomes a Fed case, correct?
Yeah, correct.
But this is before he hung himself, killed himself.
Before he hung himself, yeah.
First of all, there's conspiracy around that. Do you think he actually killed himself?
I think that he was killed. I can't imagine him killing himself. And I always use this reasoning. Like, I was in the feds with the Tiger King mm-hmm. in the same, in a pod next to him. And just for reference. And, you know, when you're getting released out of prison, even if it's to go on house arrest, you don't kill yourself that day.
No.
You don't kill yourself when you get great news. And great news may be that you're just being transferred prisons. John McAfee lost his extradition case, meaning he was going to be transferred from that dungeon prison cell that he was in Spain, mm-hmm. that nasty place, to America. The day he finds out that he's being transferred to America, great news if you're John McAfee. You're still in prison.
Maybe, though, because you can't buy your way out of American prison, you know?
And he's probably going to lose. So yeah. There is that psychology yeah. where he maybe just gave up. But he's a hard Irish guy, man.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And I mean,
He wants to win.
And he's all about the media coverage. This is another huge opportunity. He beat Belize, like the whole Belize murder case. Like, why would you? And I'm not trying to drum up conspiracy. I'm just saying. I mean, I wouldn't kill myself if I was being transferred that day out of my prison cell.
Right.
But he was found dead in his prison cell the day he was being transferred to America. Maybe he gave up hope. Mm. But if he was killed, why was he killed? And he had a lot of information on certain individuals in the government. Hillary being one.
Really?
A couple people.
Why did he have access to damning information?
I don't know. He told me he did. And we transferred the information to two guys in Miami. I saw it. I saw the Manila envelope that he uh-huh. had with the hard drives. He said, "Don't ever sell this to anybody."
Wow.
I didn't kill myself. If I do, which I later found out was called the dead man switch. I didn't know what the dead man switch was. I kept on saying, "What? Dead man switch? What?" Well, I guess when McAfee died, if he was to die, information was about to be, was going to be released.
Right.
Now I'm careful with this because maybe that was something else he gave those two guys in mm-hmm. Miami. I'll never know, you know, and I'm not alluding to that either. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it was information on Hillary, but he definitely always said he had wow. serious, bad information on her. He goes, "You wouldn't believe the sick stuff I got on her."
Wow. I tend to believe it. Where there's smoke, if everybody is calling out the Clintons for 40 years now,
yeah,
there's got to be some truth to it.
All over the place.
People are dying. Oh, you see her death list?
It's crazy.
The Hillary Clinton death. Yeah. It's like 50 names. 50 people? Yeah, do you know 50 people? Well, besides the military, like my family doesn't know 50 people that have died that are close to us, associates. That's weird.
It's pretty far out there, but it's hard for us to reason with that too.
Conceptualize.
It's hard
that.
For me to understand these things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, especially because you want to believe that there's a logical explanation, or you want to believe that like the system is mostly intact.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to believe that they're capable of doing this.
Yeah.
Like when the FBI lied in a memo to my SEAL command, I just couldn't believe that the FBI was allowed to do that. That right. I even foolishly sent Inspector General complaints to the FBI.
Yeah,
all these complaints to my senators.
Yeah,
well, my senator, Senator Cruz, will stand up for me as a uh-huh. SEAL in Texas.
Right.
Nothing.
Wow.
The Inspector General, nothing. The FBI investigative thing said, they sent me a letter and they said, well, our FBI agents have a wide latitude of investigative authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. And I say, and I wrote them back, no, you literally, literally lied about my testimony. Like Jimmy said this, da, da, da. My testimony says something completely different. I mean, it was damning.
Yeah.
It was a complete change of.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I was naive.
Yeah. I mean, they've always spied on people and, you know, Martin Luther King, they, you know, wiretapped his house and all this shit. But it feels like, the last generation, they've gotten so politicized. They've gotten just they've become completely rogue from the law. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And my dad always said, you know, follow the money trail. When things are confusing, when things are chaotic, like, why are we sending billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine? Follow the money trail.
Yeah.
It's all about money. It's right. all about funding somebody's big pockets. And man, that's why I think I don't think the damage that's done to America right now is irreversible. I think it's irreversible.
You do?
No, I don't think it can be reversed.
I
don't think I don't think there's any hope for
really
for the damage that's been done. Unless it could happen with this next election.
I think it can be. Look, empires tend to not change course. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, like how can it?
Like things keep when you reach enough inertia. Yeah. Going down, you can't pivot. There has to be some kind of reckoning or some kind of diffusion of the empire. Yeah. Like the Roman Empire had to break up into different empires. Maybe that's the fate of the United States.
If we go on the same course as we are now, which we will if Kamala gets in office, we will continue on the same. If we continue on the same course, let's say another 4 years, and that turns into a decade, then we're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you could throw something in the wheel right now and hopefully dismantle.
I think it's technology. I think it's Bitcoin. I think it's a mix of robotics and immigrants will help too, because they shore up the GDP and shit like that. But I do think maybe things have to get so bad that we're forced to pivot. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's 10 years of shit getting worse. Tell us about Colombia really quick. Tell us about your mercenary shit. This is the stuff that we didn't get to, but I'm fascinated. I always love to talk about.
The mercenary stuff is fascinating because it's not people get stuff mixed up too. A lot of times people say he was a Blackwater mercenary. No, that's contractor.
Yeah.
You're still in a defensive role for the Department of State.
Right.
You're a contractor. You're a GS-13. You have a black diplomatic passport, but you're a contractor. Mercenary.
Yes. What is the difference?
Mercenary is on an entire another level. Like my buddy I did mercenary stuff with, his last job before we connected, he was Israeli Mossad. He sat in a cafe. I won't say where, a cafe for coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And he just had a newspaper and a .22 and drilled the dude in the face while he's drinking coffee and stood up and walked away.
Holy shit.
Now that was for a undisclosed amount of money. Now, that's a very aggressive, offensive posture.
Right.
Now, did I ask the guy, did he deserve it? Because I'm always I'm still along the lines of, did he deserve it? But a mercenary doesn't ask those questions.
Right.
A mercenary never says, does he deserve it?
No.
Because it doesn't matter to a mercenary.
He's getting paid.
He doesn't matter. And that's where I had a problem with my time as a mercenary.
I see.
I had a very difficult, difficult problem with that.
Okay, so who were you hired by? What years did you work as a mercenary?
You're hired. Okay, years.
Yeah, to give people frame of reference.
Directly when I left McAfee, I went on a sabbatical. I was basically a fugitive on the run. So,
so this is 19 to 22.
19 to 22.
So the 3 years. Okay.
Yeah. 19 to 22, and I first went to I first went to Colombia. No, I got my bearings in Mexico.
Do you have money on you still?
Yeah, I always had cash, man.
So you made a shitload of money.
Yeah, I was always like liquidating Bitcoin. I had a bunch of money.
Okay.
I had a bunch of crypto. I wish I still had it. But I was always liquidating enough money. I would tell my buddy, hey, man, give me 10,000, give me 10,000, give me 10,000.
I see.
Of course, he's taking out 5,000 every time he gives me 10,000.
Right.
But that kind of, when you're in that kind of mentality, you don't care.
Yeah.
You're just like, all right, I know you're stealing from me, whatever. And so I go from Mexico, make some contacts there. I traveled to Medellin, Colombia.
Right.
And I'm having a hard time with my Spanish there. So it's super frustrating, but I have to live there. I have to work, you know? And so I'm really trying to brush up on my Spanish, trying to learn, you know, Rosetta, all this, or those apps, you know?
Yep.
You know, because you can't even order, like, it's not like Mexico, you know, in Colombia, Medellin, Colombia, man, you can't even order a coffee without, if you,
most people don't speak English there.
Nobody did when I was there. And so I would like point to the menu and you're going to get like a steak. If you even point to the coffee, it's weird. People just don't, they're like, what?
Yeah.
But I was a gringo with all these tattoos. And so, I mean, I never saw anybody else like me in Medellin while I was there. Like I was always like walking around. It was always like the population, you know, the Latin American, and people would walk on the other side of the street. Cause they kind of knew what I was doing. I don't know how to explain it. Like you're not there.
Of course you're there. There's only three reasons.
Yeah.
Like coke, you're or women.
Drug. Yeah. Yeah. You're part of the cartel doing some business for them. And I was offered, right when I retired from the SEALs, I was actually offered $400K by a cartel to come down and train them in Mexico.
Really?
Yeah. I was offered a lot of money.
Do you know who they were?
I ain't saying no.
Can you tell us what region it was at least?
It was Tijuana.
Okay.
Tijuana.
Gotcha.
In that area.
Okay. Okay.
Close to here.
Okay. So you're in Medellin. You've got to work. So what's your thought process?
So I got plenty of cash on hand. I made a lot of money. So I got plenty of cash. I got some cash stored underneath the bed.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm trying to resist the temptation of the girls, the women, the drugs. And so, but everybody says Colombian coke, bro.
You know,
Colombian, sure. All these girls. And so I can't, as much as willpower as I'd like to think I have, I just break.
Yeah.
So I go, I'm going to go out for a drink. Okay. I'm going to go out for a drink.
One drink.
4 days later, I'm in the grocery store trying to buy the baking soda in a spoon and like the ingredients to make crack. Like, that's how fast, bro.
I love Colombia.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It's real, bro. It was real.
It was real. And I try not to glorify it too much, but it's just real.
Jesus hadn't come into your life yet.
Jesus. Okay, yeah, that's a great point. Jesus had not visited me, so I can say anything I want right now.
Of course
right?
you can. Yeah, we're talking war stories.
Yeah, yeah. And so I start going on these benders with multiple girls, but I'm not even doing anything with these girls, by the way, because... Wait, hold on. Before anybody judges me here, when you're doing that much cocaine,
right,
and you're up for that many hours, your priorities are not sex.
No, you're not fucking.
Your priorities are
more blow.
Blow. You know, what do we gotta do? And so
chugging beers to fucking
chugging just, drinks, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you end up kicking them out, or they piss you off, or you end up having a meltdown, you know, it's like Al Pacino stuffing Scarface, you know, like burying your head, say hello. And so I'm pretty good at making friends. And I was making connections down there and getting the good stuff. Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, I can take this two routes. I can either start selling this, distribute, you know, big quantities and kind of working out a deal. I can train these guys with my skills, or I can go do mercenary work.
Mm.
And so I picked the mercenary thing because that's what I know.
Yeah.
That's what I can do.
Right. You're great at it.
Gun for hire. Yeah. Yeah.
How are you making these seedy connections with such limited Spanish?
Easy. Because like you're a major podcaster now. You're famous.
Thanks.
And so, yeah, you are. And so you know guys in your field. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't, you're just a text away from a guy over here that knows this guy that can put you in connection with your next big shot. And so it was the same way with me and the SEALs. Yeah. I was like, hey, bro, do you have any connections over here? Nah, man, but I know this one cat. I think he's doing stuff in El Salvador right now.
Right.
Hey, can you put me in connection with him? Put me in a word with him.
Right.
All right. Next thing I get a message on Signal. Hey, man, this is Big Squeezy. What's up? You know, like what do you want to do? And I, you know, we can't talk much here. And I'll be like, I know. I just want to do work. Okay. And so that's what my first conversation was with a guy, and he was like, he's like, come down. I contact him. on the WhatsApp or Signal or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got blow over here, girls everywhere. And I'm like, bro, I got to make some money, bro. And he's like, okay, I got something for you.
Big Squeezy said this.
Big Squeezy. I'm just going to call him Big Squeezy. His name was Big Squeezy. But Big Squeezy, and I don't know why I call him that, but he says, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to El Salvador, San Salvador.
Yeah.
To a hotel. You're going to ask the, this is crazy. You're going to ask the clerk, the hotel clerk, for a silver suitcase. He's going to give you a key. You're going to unlock that silver suitcase. And there's going to be $100,000 or so in there, give or take. Mm-hmm. Maybe $90,000. He's like, you're going to take $9,900. Don't travel with
$10,000.
Mm-hmm. Travel, you know, you're going to take $9,900 out of that box. And then you're going to write down that you took it, like some X, and then just do the deduction, please, and do the math there. And I'm like, what the heck, bro? You trust me with this? And then you're going to take that and bring it to Nicaragua. And
you were just supposed to take $9,900 out of the suitcase.
Yep.
Record it and then put the suitcase back.
Oh,
wow.
And then,
holy shit.
And then travel to, if I get this
Nicaragua.
Nicaragua. And tell them that you're a surfer and you're there for volcano watching and you're a surfer. And if they ask you where your surfboard is, just say you're there to see a friend and, you know, this kind of story. Mm-hmm. I said, all right, man, let's go. I don't care. And so I go to San Salvador. That was sketchy. Yeah. There's like dead bodies on the, man, there's like guys in those hazmat suits. This ain't the San Salvador now. This ain't El Salvador now.
This is before
the
cleanup. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's eerie.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
Yeah.
You've got like a mass graveyard on the highway from the airport. It reminded me of Baghdad, Route Irish.
Wow.
It was just as bad. Wow. Horrible error. I go from there. I land there. I travel to the airport. I get this silver suitcase. It doesn't open. And I feel like a rookie, man. I'm supposed to be a mercenary, bro.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be on my game. You can't be playing this stupid game. And so I'm like, hey, Big Squeezy. I'm like, it ain't opening. He goes, don't bullshit me, man. He goes, that's not how it works. You got the wrong suitcase. I said, no, it's exactly what you said. Well, of course, it was the wrong suitcase. I had the guy go in the back again. And it looked so suspicious, you know.
Of course.
Like, you know, weird stuff, and then transfer it to my room. And so I stay there a night, and then I get to Nicaragua. I travel to Nicaragua on my own, and I meet these two guys there. One's a SEAL dude I know that was locked up in a Bosnia or somewhere, man. So crazy, bro. And I mean, I thought he was dead. I thought this guy was dead. And I see him in Nicaragua at this coffee shop. And I'm like, what's up, bro? Like, I thought you were dead, you know?
Yeah,
these are the kind of conversations you have with mercenaries. I thought you were dead. I thought you were locked up in a dungeon in Yugoslavia,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so we sit down. It's super shady. Israeli Mossad guys there and a SEAL from SEAL Team 6. Ex-SEAL guy. And they're like, okay, bro, here's the deal. And I'm like, God, what is it going to be? You know, they said you can keep the cash, the 10 grand that you took,
mm-hmm.
and you can leave after this conversation. And we never talked. We never spoke. You just leave. You can take the 10K for coming out here. If you decide to stay, you can keep the 10K. And there's probably another 400K involved here. And I said, I'm down. And they were like, no, listen first. And I was like, no, I don't need to listen. I was like, just send it to my mom. I mean, I give them wire instructions. I'm like, yeah, I just want you to send it to my mom because I don't trust nobody. I wanted them to wire it to my mom in case I died because there was a very high chance of probability of you're going to get smoked.
And you're also back in that mindset like you were in Baghdad, like, oh, I could die.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or have to kill somebody and then die.
Yeah, yeah. And you're in a communist country. I mean, there's roadblocks everywhere,
right?
Military everywhere,
right?
It ain't no joke. And you're there as surfers, bro.
Yeah.
Surfers.
Yeah.
Volcano watchers. But you don't look like, we don't look like surfers. I mean, three of us sitting in at the coffee shop, you know, it just didn't look right.
Right.
It's just suspicious.
It's suspect for sure.
It's like all these guys are wearing black shirts and it's not like we're like Men in Black and but we just kind of like, something ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
So that made you really paranoid. So they basically were like, okay, so check it out, bro. Think about this tonight.
and tell us in the morning. I'm like, I already made my decision. I came out here, bro. Let's do this. What do we got? Who do we got to, you know, do, you know? And he's like, okay, we got to kidnap the president of Nicaragua. We got to kidnap the ex-president of El Salvador, who's in Nicaragua, who's exiled in Nicaragua now. And that new president that's in right now,
Bukele
promised his people that he would get him alive back into the country alive.
Wow.
In 6 months. And so I'm like, bro, I'm like, you got, like, this is devastating news for a mercenary. Cause you're like, alive? Like, no, bro, come on, man. You know what I mean? You're like,
wow.
You're like, why? Like, because like to kidnap somebody is extremely difficult.
It's way harder than just killing them.
To kidnap a grown ass man who's living with a TikTok star, some girl.
Really?
Who is a TikTok star. And he's got 2-3 guards around him at night. And he's got 2 Nicaraguan pit bulls. I didn't even know there was Nicaraguan pit bulls. And it sounded scary, though.
Yeah.
And they said, and the problem is we don't have any weapons right now. We're trying to get silenced 22s, you know, with the built-in silencers, the cans, suppressors. And I'm like, so you want us to go in there with what, hammers and an axe and some sticks and try to like get this guy? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, man, dude, I was like, I flew all the way down here for this. And so I decided to do it with him. I decided to stay and do it. And we stayed there for about a month and a half.
Waiting for the guns?
2 months.
No, or just no, scoping
actually,
out the joint.
Actually plotting to do it.
Okay.
And there was one time we went up and did a penetration test. Basically, we went up because he was out on the street with his guard. And we just went up and shook his hand. One of our guys shook his hand. And we noticed his bodyguard didn't do anything. He got scared. He just kind of was like, because it was scary. You know, when you walk up to somebody, you go, hey, how you doing, sir? It was just to see how close we get. But the problem is, after that penetration test, that scared him. That made him. I think that was a fatal mistake. And so that made him get locked. That he locked down in his compound.
Yeah.
So we thought about setting fire to his house, you know, to get him out of there one night. We just brainstormed over the next 30 days. Mm-hmm. We thought about putting me on the underside of a carriage of a truck that these trucks were going in every day. Uh-huh. And then I would hide out in the guard shack and then bonk these two guys over the head, take their weapons, and then kidnap the guy. But we had it really thoroughly planned out. We had ketamine we were going to give him. And
yeah.
And this was sanctioned
by the government of El Salvador.
By the El Salvador government. Yeah. In fact, we were meeting with the El Salvador government and we were meeting with a CIA operative from America under Big TRUMP, you know?
What is that? Oh, under Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
Wow.
And in Nicaragua.
Because they wanted to help. They wanted this guy. He was exiled there because he stole a bunch of money. Yeah, he, as president.
Right.
Corruption.
Right.
Exiled himself.
But America can't. You can't, there's no legal basis for that. So they have to act through intermediaries. Through
Yeah.
And this is how.
And this was sanctioned.
This is sanctioned.
The El Salvador Navy battleships were on the coastline getting ready for us to strap this guy all ketamined out on a surfboard in shark infested waters, major shark infested water.
And yeah.
Swim this guy out, me and this other SEAL. Load him onto their vessel, burn the cigar cartel ship, boat that we had, which wrecked itself somehow. The guy wrecked it before it sunk it. So we had a big deal. But and swim him out to these vessels and then put him on trial.
Wow. That's why, as we were talking about before this podcast, somebody running to a non-extradition country to try to escape the long arm of U.S. justice. Bro, they'll just get a mercenary to kidnap you.
There's no escape. You know, there's no escape. You know, the FBI told me that very clear. They said, Jimmy, you were thinking about going to Bali. I mean, they could see everything. It was like the hand of God. They put everything. My Google searches. This is before Jesus met me.
Right.
Google searches.
Yeah.
Drugs, paraphernalia. I mean, just anything and everything you've ever ordered, you ever looked at was on a massive screen. Right. And all the lawyers are looking at me like, you're. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, don't judge me, man.
Wait. And what's ironic is during this time, you're on the run from the feds.
I'm on the run from the feds.
But also meeting with a CIA operative.
Yeah.
I'm meeting with a CIA operative, and the CIA operative, we tell the CIA operative, we say, hey, man, you expect us to kidnap this guy? Please ask them if we can pop, you know, we can do this and this and this.
Yeah.
And end this nightmare, because I'm tired of living in Nicaragua, acting like I'm a surfer and it's a communist country. But we figured the president of Nicaragua knew, was in on it, and just took the ex-president's money,
right,
and let him exile there.
Oh,
because he
sure
took the money.
Right.
$300 million. He took the money.
Wow.
And now he was just letting them.
Makes sense.
He was being safe there.
Yeah.
And so finally, the operative CIA guy, he finds us two silenced 22s.
By the way, does he know who you are? Like, you're the fact that you're on the run?
He doesn't care. These guys
probably
don't
doesn't
care.
Ask. He doesn't
at this
care.
Level. They don't.
They don't care.
They're not. No. They look at you and kind of look at you and look away.
Yeah.
They of everything.
There's no
like,
law at that level. No. There's no law.
It's
all about what you can do for me. I don't care what you've done.
This is like black ops stuff. This is like pure, way, way high. This is like the top. I was talking to those guys, those mercenary guys, and out of all the things that they had done, that was the most highest thing they've ever done. Sketchiest, highest.
Most
like,
black.
Like if anybody, yeah, it was the most black ops stuff you could ever do is that. It's to kidnap the ex-president of El Salvador and swim him out on ketamine.
In collusion with El Salvadoran, Nicaraguan, and
probably us.
Yeah,
too.
CIA. Wow, that is fucking, it is real, bro. The movies are real.
The movies are real, bro.
The movies just borrow from real life.
And there's people that are doing this stuff now, you know? Yeah. I'm sure there's stuff going on. I'm not really privy to it anymore, but I've kind of stayed out of that stuff.
No, 100%. I mean, I think just like a easy example is what the kidnapping of Mayo Zambada, the last drug lord in Mexico. You know, there's no way that this rival cartel could have got to him without at least some help from the CIA.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? At least one guy being like, hey, we're going to facilitate. We're going to make sure the plane is there. We're going to make sure you have safe passage. You know what I mean?
There's like, so much involvement. And one thing I noticed with the CIA when I was doing this stuff is it was like no holds barred. It was like you asked the CIA operative, you need something. Like he would have done anything. Anything. And
no rules.
No, he was just like I said, the guy up at top said, do it and do whatever you have to do.
Yeah.
We don't care. We don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
We don't want to bring any information to the big man.
Right.
We just want you to execute the mission.
Right. Plausible deniability for the CIA.
Separate layers of separation. One guy.
Did the guy, was the CIA operative? Did he have a big mass of black curly hair?
No, he was
kind of like Andrew Bustamante.
He was the most. It was Andrew Bustamante.
It was Bustamante the whole time.
No.
Andrew, you know I love you, man. Come on, dog. Okay, so he got you these silencers. Finally, 22s with silencers.
No, okay, they got the silencers, and they had them stashed away, but they weren't exactly what we wanted. I mean, they would do, but they weren't exactly what we wanted to do. Anyways, man, I hate to be a big spoiler alert. I hate to, you know, have this great story and then not produce a live ex-president on trial for the San Salvador government. But we actually tried.
Was the plan to kill the bodyguards, though?
The plan was to smoke anybody who we didn't want to. We didn't want to smoke them because that was like a no-no. It was like, please don't kill anybody. But if you have to, get the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were thinking, all right, we're going to look for a reason. Well, you're going to, like, if we show up and you go for your gun, you're getting smoked.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Right.
But we didn't trust the guns. We waited. If it was up to me, brother, we would have went all the way in on it. But the one guy who was kind of the lead, you always have a leader, you know, and I was brought in. He was sidestepping it and not pulling the trigger on it, so to speak. And so he waited and Sun Tzu, Art of War, said, you know, cleverness has never been associated to long overdue delays, you know,
right.
It's not clever. It's right. Only bad things can start to happen.
Right.
And so we started having tertiary plans to get out of there, to exit out of there, go through these checkpoints. But really, man, I'll never forget the night we executed on it, the night we did it, the night we tried it for it. that night, we looked at each other and we said, you know that there's no getting caught here. We can't get caught. Mm. You're going to die.
Yeah.
You're going to be put in prison. You're going to be that guy on the newspaper. Everybody's like, dang, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
So there was no chance in hell that we were going to
go out alive.
Yeah.
If you, yeah, what's your escape plan? What's the escape plan now? Because you've been reshuffling plans.
So the escape plan is to, once we get him, take him down to the water, swim him out, and then we're going to all go on our separate ways and then go through customs.
Got it. Got it.
And we had this big passport exchange.
Yeah.
The El Salvador government was going to give us our passports back, all kinds of weird stuff, bro.
Yeah.
And it was complex, super complex. And the night we did it, we said, hey, we can't get caught, bro. So if things go south and there's military vehicles and patrols and convoys everywhere in Nicaragua, major communist country, he said, we're just going to absolutely destroy the first armed guard truck we see, like reverse into it. The only way you can defeat somebody if they're chasing you is to slam on the brakes. I mean, hard, as hard as you can.
Yeah.
And when they run into you, you jump out and with total violent aggressive and overtake them, right?
Yeah.
And get their bigger weapons.
Right.
It was crazy, but we were willing to do it. And so we went and tried. It was unsuccessful. We acted like the car was broke down, you know, smoking, you know, the thing. And then our one guy who seems, he looked kind of Spanish, kind of pull it off. Mm-hmm. He said some broken Spanish to the guard to try to get him to open the guard to help. Cause the only way this compound was secure that we're trying to break into this compound with this guy in it.
Right.
And finally, man, we're desperate. And so, and that's desperate actions can cause a lot of, I mean,
cleverness.
Yeah. No cleverness. And so me and the Mossad guy hide behind the vehicle, rear of the vehicle in the night. And it was real dark out there. That's what we're thinking we had for us.
You're strapped?
We didn't have weapons or nothing. Oh, we were just going to do this because we were tired of waiting in the piece of shit. 22 we got was crap. So we said, we're just going to go do this with crowbars and stuff. And we had some crazy stuff. We had a hammer, a crowbar, something. And he said something in Spanish to the guy, and I'll never forget that guard. He came up there and he grabbed his pistol and his radio and he walked up real slowly and he was just staring at my boy like this. And my boy said again, he said, hey, can you open this up and help us, man, in Spanish? And the guy looked at him. I'll never forget, man. He just started backing up real slow, like inch by inch, just like slow, slow. And then he just turned and bounced. And that it was blown at that point.
Oh, my God.
Because you can't get through the. And if it was up to me, man, I would have rushed that guy very early on, a month earlier. Like, just get it done. Just grab this dude and let's play it by ear. Maybe that's not the smartest.
Mm.
But that was the craziest thing I've ever done.
And so you guys had to flee after that. You both fled the scene.
We fled because after that they had gun trucks.
Yeah.
Like the movie Rambo, gun trucks racing down the streets.
Yeah.
You know, people yelling out, you know, da 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 da.
Wow. Wow. That is fucking bananas. I mean, look, it's probably for the best. You probably would have got killed or something. Like, who knows if you would have got your hands on him? Like,
I've never been that high pumped up to do any mission in my life. I've done a lot of missions, man. And I'll tell you, that was the most, it was hard to control. My heart, like it was hard to control I kept controlling my breathing, you know, on the way there. Mm-hmm. It was pitch black and we're all sitting there and we're just like, we're doing this, bro. You're doing it, bro.
Wow.
You know,
where'd you go after that?
Done a lot of stuff, man. Did Thailand, did work for Background Asia, Malacca Straits, did a lot of anti-piracy stuff.
Where was the anti-piracy stuff?
It was based out of Singapore.
Oh.
But it was long. It was through the, is it through the Suez Canal, Malacca Straits, and along the Somali coast.
Right.
Wow. Stuff,
yeah. So how are you entering these places? Like, do you have backstories or do you have fake passports? Like,
yeah, you always have a backstory, but you're not like necessarily like full blown lying because you're not being interrogated. Now, I was always pulled in the back at customs in Colombia, and I was always pulled out of line. Like this one gringo dude, man. I was like, dang. And later on, when I was arrested by the FBI, I realized that in all my travels, everywhere I was going, the FBI was watching me.
Wow.
Doing all this stuff.
The whole fucking time. The whole time you were on the run, they knew where you were the entire time.
Bro, they knew everything about me.
So creepy.
Like, I would go through customs and like I would get pulled out of the line and they would put me in an office for like an hour.
Yeah.
And I'd say, keep your cool. Yeah. They don't know anything. I don't have anything on me ever.
Right.
And then this nice customs officer came in one time. She was an American in Colombia or somewhere. And she came in, she goes, "Hey, sorry for holding you up. We just had a misunderstanding. Here's your passport back." She goes, "We found these pills in your thing." And they were some illegal pills in my bag. And she goes, "What are these?" And I said, and she knew straight up what they were. It wasn't like, and I wasn't even trying to hide. And I said, "Antibiotics." And she goes, "Oh, right. Antibiotics. Here you go." And I thought, you know, that should be you shouldn't be happy about them letting you go with these.
Right.
Because something is not right.
Right.
Like, why would she look at me and say, of course they're antibiotics. You're right, Jimmy. Of course. Wow. Have fun on your trip.
Wow. And so they're
always letting me go with this weird stuff. And I'm like.
And how did they not, why didn't they grab you right there? You know?
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe they were following you, trying to see if you were going to kill somebody or maybe
something like that.
Or maybe who knows? I don't know.
I don't know. But that's when, so when they finally nabbed me up.
And that was where you were back in the States, right?
In Dallas, Texas. Okay. I was home to see my mom one last time. When they finally.
It's on video. It's on your Instagram, I believe.
So I just posted on my Instagram. It's crazy. My mom took the video. She's like, "You got the tater." I'm like, "Mom, be quiet, man. This is supposed to be a devastating moment." She's like, "You're filming,
trying to go viral."
Yeah. She's filming. She goes, "I got you guys on camera. You ain't ever going to take down my son." You know, and they're like taking me down.
Yeah.
And, but once they caught me, man, they put me in front of a big projector screen and bro, they had all my, I remember every single time they pulled me out of those customs, they had all my stuff laid down on a table, take pictures of it and labeled.
Yeah.
They put so much work into me, man.
Wow. They wanted you.
Me. Yeah.
If they really want you, there's no hiding in this world.
No.
The world's
no.
too small now.
No. I literally thought I was headed to Bali for the rest of my life and I was just nabbed up, man.
Fuck, dude. That is fascinating.
Crazy story.
And then, but it resolved because then Jesus came calling.
Bro, I literally had Jesus meet me in the darkest time of my life.
Yeah.
I was facing that 15 years in prison, like I said, always. And it was the most incredible thing that's ever happened to me in my life. Like I'll never forget that, how undeserving that I was to receive that. And I'm always like, dude, there's only gotta be two reasons why Jesus did that for me. One is because of his endless, infinite mercy, no matter what you've done in your life.
Yes.
No matter what big piece of crap you are in this life, going around as a mercenary, or doing drugs. I baptized myself after a 3-day Coke binge in Medellin, Colombia. Like I was desperate for hope, bro. And nothing worked. The altar calls, nothing worked. And so it was crazy life, my crazy life. And the second reason is because I know he knew that if I save Jimmy right now, if I show up in a miraculous way that defies all odds and all supernatural things, then I know that he's going to tell other people. Because when the blind man at the gate or the paralyzed man at the gate was told to stand up by Peter and John, you know, he said, the beggar said, "Will you give me a coin?" And they said, "We don't, silver and gold, we don't have, but all that we have, I give you. Stand up in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth." Man, you know, God, I don't need silver and gold. I need Jesus and my people need Jesus in their life. And man, when he showed up in my life, I was worse off or the same as the paralyzed man. I was blind and now I see. And once you see, you can't unsee the truth.
I agree. Wow. What a fucking life, man. And it's just getting better.
Just getting better all the time.
Yeah. Dude, that's awesome. So go over to plug your website again.
Yeah, jimmywatson.co.
Jimmywatson.co, that's right.
At Mighty Warrior 24.
Yes, yeah. And again, one more time, the name of the foundation.
Operation Restored Warrior, man.
Operation Restored Warrior. That, I mean, damn.
The most powerful organization.
Incredible.
And there are very little people know about them.
Yeah, no shit, right? Like Rogan always plugs like the Wounded Warrior Project.
The enemy wants to snuff out the real organizations.
Yeah.
They've had so much stuff come against them. But I'll tell you what, I have never in my life experienced something like Operation Restore Warrior.
Okay, so they can donate. All those links will be in the description.
Thank you
go,
so much.
Go support Jimmy. And thank you again, man.
Thank you what so much, everybody, afternoon, dude. For listening.
Thank Absolutely. You, brother. You killed it. Thanks, guys. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Thank you.